morning, happy Monday, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. As always, that is Nick Wright. We have so much to talk about today. Not sure 3 hours is long enough. It's going to have to be long enough. Rams squeaked by Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. The Chiefs once again looked unstoppable, but how could we not start with the Red Sox and the Dodgers? Game 5 of the World Series, do or die for Clayton Kershaw and Los Angeles. And it looked like die-er for Kershaw early on. First inning, Steve Pierce hits the two-run home run. Kershaw struggling again in the postseason, gave up 7 hits, 4 runs in 7 innings of work. David Price on the hill for the Red Sox, trying to redeem his own playoff demons. Bottom of the first, he gets Manny Machado to strike out, ends the inning. Bottom 5, Chris Taylor strikes out. Price's 5th of the night. And in the 7th, gets Yasiel Puig to ground out right back to him. Price finished giving up just 3 hits and 1 run in 7 innings of work. Bottom 8, now Pierce up again. His 2nd home run of the night, this time off Pedro Baez, and the Red Sox go up 5-2-1. Bottom of the 9th now, Chris Sale coming in, looking to close us out, and he gets Manny Machado swinging. Red Sox win the World Series, their 4th since 2004, while the Dodgers lose back-to-back World Series. Here is Mookie Betts on a fantastic Red Sox season.
It's a dream come true. AC told us from the first day in spring training we can do it, and we believe in ourselves, we believed in him, and we went out and executed.
It's very special, you know. I mean, seeing all these grown men over there just acting like little kids, it's what it's all about. You know, it's, this feeling kind of feels the same of 2008, but, you know, to go through the entire grind and to come out on top the way that we did, that was unreal.
And they bought into it, the players. At the end, we're very talented. We got talent. You know, they're very good. And one thing about them, guys, they're hungry to keep learning the game and keep getting better.
We knew we had a special team from the start in spring training. We knew what we were capable of. But I think, honestly, the guys we have in our clubhouse, the selflessness, the humility that we show, it's what got us to this point and honestly, I think, put us over the top.
We're world champions, baby! World champions, number 1! Woo!
Look, they were the best team in the regular season. They were the best team in the postseason. They were consistent. They showed that they've got talent up and down this roster. It was a great series for them. How impressive was this Red Sox dominating win over the Dodgers this series?
Well, this series, this postseason, this season, the Red Sox have validated at every single checkpoint. We were at the All-Star break. We were at the All-Star game, I should say, in Washington, D.C., talking about this Red Sox team being on a historic 114-win pace. They fell short of that, only winning 108 games, which still puts them in amazing all-time company. And then what they did in the postseason, first round, beating a 100-win Yankee team. ALCS, how about you fall down 1-0, the defending World Series champs, 103-win Astros team that a lot of people, myself included, thought, no, they're the best. Actually, the Astros are the best team in baseball. Then you win 4 straight. Then you play the defending NL champs, the best team in the National League. You beat them in 5. The only game you lose took 18 innings in all-time classic fashion. Think about the last 9 baseball games this Red Sox team has played. 4 wins in a row against Boston or against the Astros. 4 out of 5 against the Dodgers with the 1 aforementioned loss. Now that we have the benefit of hindsight, the benefit of looking at everything they did over the course of the year, you can make the argument this is one of the greatest teams ever. Like, at least as far as what they accomplished. I hesitate to say that because I picked against them in each of the last 2 rounds. But now that you see what they did in dominating fashion, this is one of the best seasons any team has had in modern baseball history.
And you have to start with the manager. I think from his messaging point, Alex Cora, from the first day of training camp, even though being a rookie manager coming off of television, and a lot of people who had worked with him in television really thought he was going to be a phenomenal manager. So that was kind of the word. You see Boone taking over the Yankees from television, Alex taking over the Red Sox from television. So it's nice to see guys like them be very, very successful. But his messaging from the point was, even though I might be a rookie, our talent is good enough. Our pitching is good enough. And that's what you saw, Nick, with the 108 wins. But clutch hitting from every guy on that roster. That's how you get to this point. And in Dodger Stadium, playing three games, you mentioned the 18-inning game that they lost. But what about his managerial skills in a National League ballpark in those last two games? He looked just as comfortable. You wouldn't have known that he was managing in the American League the way he handled those last three games there in Dodger Stadium.
And how about even going further back with Cora, sticking with David Price? When people in Boston wanted his head, how did David Price pay him back? Oh, three straight playoff starts, six innings pitched, three or fewer hits allowed. He becomes just the fifth guy in baseball history to do that. Oddly enough, one of the other guys to do that was Clayton Kershaw a few years ago. Now, Kershaw's also now on the top of a worst list, which is worst ERA in baseball history when facing elimination, having done it at least four times. But what the Red Sox did, not just over the last three games, but over the series, but over the last three games. Think about it. You lose the ultimate stomach punch game to go down or to only be up 2-1. And then you're down 4-0 in game four. Puig hits that home run. The whole team is down. Chris Sale goes crazy in the dugout trying to fire guys up. They score nine.
I think that was a pivotal point because that's not something you typically see in baseball.
No.
As far as someone, we see it in basketball, we see it in football all the time, but someone who can't be involved because he's resting his arm, but to see him trying to encourage his teammates, and it wasn't the type of energy that was negative, you know, it was more trying to encourage them. Yes, we can, and ultimately be able to come back in that game was the difference in the series.
And he said, I was very pointed. I said, this is who we are. We're better than this game right now. Let's go out there and finish it off. And a lot of people said that was, like CeCe said, a turning point for them.
And from the seventh inning on in that game, they scored nine runs in innings 7, 8, 9. Steve Pierce, the World Series MVP, who was acquired midseason along with some cash for a prospect that I looked it up this morning, was not one of the Red Sox going into the year, one of their top 20 prospects. They gave away a middling prospect for Steve Pierce. What'd he do in games 4 and 5? Oh, just 4 for 8, 3 home runs, 7 RBIs, clutch hitting. He was unbelievable, and that is, to your point, Jenna, what they had done all year. You didn't know. Sure, J.D. Martinez could beat you. Mm-hmm. Sure, the presumptive AL MVP Mookie Betts could beat you.
Yeah,
but Steve Pierce going to hit you in the head? Like, you can't expect that.
All right, so now you look at the other side, the Dodgers. This is another disappointing end to the season for them. They have a lot of questions that have to be answered on that team between the manager, between Clayton Kershaw. But just sticking to this series, what happened to them down the stretch?
Well, you have to have several questions about the managing, couple moves that he made. He's going to be criticized for that. That's part of being in the big time, but when you have your best player in Kershaw and he does not come through for you, it's going to be hard for the Dodgers to win. But also, we have to be careful. This is a great Red Sox organization and team. So a lot of time when you run into things like that, you're overcritical of the team that lost. And typically, in historic fashion, you know, the Dodgers, yeah, they had a good series, but they couldn't overcome the totality of the Boston Red Sox.
And listen, baseball commentary can be so fickle. If the Dodgers hold on to that lead in game four, if Madsen, gosh, Madsen again, if Ryan Madsen, I mean, just never play him again.
What was his ERA?
When he came in,
well, his
I said,
ERA is actually
on.
Not terrible because he just gives up other guys'
right.
runs.
Yeah.
But regardless, if the Dodgers hold on to that lead, then people may be criticizing Cora for going all in game three, for doing what he did in game mm-hmm. three, for exhausting guys he didn't necessarily have to, using Nathan Eovaldi in the way he did. Nathan Eovaldi was going to be the game three starter. Then he was going to be the game four starter. Then never start Nathan Eovaldi. Just show up in almost every game. And Kershaw is the story on the Dodgers' end. The best pitcher of his generation now has the worst ERA in elimination games in baseball history. That ain't great. This was a moment for him this series to change the one black mark on his history, and instead, unfortunately, he reinforced it. But the real history of this series is the following. Here's the full list of World Series winners with more regular season wins than these Red Sox. 1909 Pirates, 2761 and 98 Yankees. That's the list. The full list of baseball teams who've ever won more games, regular season and postseason combined, than this year's Red Sox. The 98 Yankees. That's the list. The 98 Yankees, the 2018 Red Sox, two most wins of any team in the history of baseball. I know the season and the playoffs have expanded,
sure.
But I mean, this isn't, to C's point, I think any team was going to lose to these guys. The Astros lost 2-5. Dodgers lost 2-5. Yanks lost 2-4. Like, this team evidently was not getting beaten this postseason.
Jen and I were wondering, did you read that to yourself before you placed your bets?
Listen, man. The Dodgers in six is officially dead. Puig MVP, thought it had some life, officially dead. I'm not afraid to admit when I was wrong.
Yeah, you had a better chance of hitting.
I blame Ryan Madsen.
Boston Red Sox win their fourth World Series title since 2004. Very impressive win. Congratulations to them. Coming up, we'll talk some football. It was a big football weekend. Can the Packers recover from their crushing loss this Sunday? Next on First Things First.
Hey, guys, we'll get right back to the show, but first, I'm here to tell you about 4Hims. Most guys don't do nearly enough for their skin, despite all it does for them. Soap and water are just not enough to prevent aging, but 4Hims is here to help. Hims Anti-Aging Kit is a custom prescription cream tailored to your skin that can keep your skin looking youthfully smooth by reducing the appearance of wrinkles and fine lines. It can renew and restore skin by increasing collagen, the protein that keeps your skin firm. It takes seconds to apply, and it's the same treatment celebrities use to keep their faces looking young, except you don't have to visit some fancy dermatologist or pay high prices to get it. No more awkward in-person doctor's office visits, and the products are shipped directly to your door. It's your skin. Do you want to be a face in the crowd or the face in the crowd? Order now and save $20 off your first month of the Hims Anti-Aging Kit. Lock in those looks now and get your first month of anti-aging for $20 off. Go to 4hims.com/FirstSC. That's 4hims.com/FirstSC. 4hims.com/FirstSC.
Welcome back. We'll get to the Packers and the Rams in a second, but first, a couple of big highlights you may have missed. College football, USC, Arizona State, N'Keal Harry make an insane one-handed grab. Full extension to get this one.
Oh, I did miss that. I hadn't seen that till this very second. That is a spectacular catch, see?
Yeah. USC stays on the highlight tape, not from a good reason. Not very good by the Trojans. You might be seeing this guy coming to a stadium near you on Sundays, one of the top-rated wide receivers we have coming out in the 2019 draft.
Look at you. Why on your draft?
Yeah, they just gave
Clemson,
it to me.
Clemson, Florida State, 300-pound Christian Wilkin in at tailback, powers his way into the end zone with 340-pound Dexter Lawrence blocking.
Jenna, remember Where's the Beef?
Yeah, I do.
It's right there in the backfield.
Ah, there it is.
I like that. I need more fat people touchdowns in my life. I like that. Now, Clemson could have scored a touchdown with just about anyone they wanted to in this football game. This was an annihilation.
Wilkins is always on the sideline telling Dabo to hand him the ball on the sideline. You can see him always in Dabo. Give me the ball. Give me the ball. They finally let him touch it.
All right, Vikings wideout Adam Thielen using the defender's helmet for a 14-yard gain. Watch it. Oh.
Great catch here. It seems like week after week, one guy's trying to top another guy's catches. Kirk Cousins throws it right at the back of his head, the way the coaches tell you to do it, and Thielen goes up and plucks it. Tremendous catch. Guy's having a tremendous season. Also had his 800-yard game last night. Still not his best game of the season after that fumble he lost.
Critical fumble loss by him shortly after this play.
Yes.
That flipped the game. We'll talk more about that later. But this guy's evolution as a player is really I gotta stop talking. Oh my God.
Finally, Kareem Hunt breaking through the middle, hurdles the D, powers into the end zone.
I mean, this whole play. All right, so Chris was watching football at my house yesterday, and he had the Chiefs game somehow like a few seconds ahead of me on his iPad. I'm watching on the screen.
Because I paid my cable bill.
That's it. And he stood up and started shouting before he even scored. They run a little fake option pitch, and then not only the hurdle, he lands on his back leg.
It was incredible. It was one of them phenomenal athletic feats. Watch him run through those two tackles right there. Jump off one leg, land on that leg,
and then still power through.
Chiefs won the game. We'll have highlights from this game coming up. But let's move on to some Packers and the undefeated L.A. Rams. Billed as a blowout by the odds makers. This was anything but. Let's jump ahead to the fourth. Aaron Rodgers finds Marquez Valdes-Scantling for the touchdown. That puts Green Bay up one. Later in the fourth, Todd Gurley runs it 23 yards down to the 13-yard line. That sets up a Greg Zuerlein field goal, and that would put the Rams up by two. Little more than 2 minutes left for Aaron Rodgers to attempt the comeback, because that's just what he does. But Ty Montgomery would never let that happen. Fumbles the ensuing kickoff. Rams recover to run out the clock. Aaron Rodgers cannot believe it. Finished the day with 286 yards and a touchdown. Rams win 29-27. They improve to 8-0. Here is Aaron Rodgers after the loss.
Yeah, very disappointing. That play didn't lose the game, but it definitely took away an opportunity for us to go down and win it.
Obviously, the plan there is to stay in the end zone. 2 minute, we actually talked about it as a team. It's clearly probably the best situation that both sides of the ball handle right now. That's what those games come to. They're decisions, and then Ty ties in that decision situation, and I'm sure Ty was trying to make a play. So, I don't know exactly how deep he was, if it was close, but I think we all realized that with the management of the clock and, where we wanted to be there, we wanted to be north of 2 minutes with the one timeout. We want to put the ball in Aaron's hands, but, you trust your players. Tough decisions, close decisions, and like I said, I think Ty was just trying to make a play.
So Ty Montgomery did not speak to the media afterwards. You could obviously feel for him, but I think Aaron Rodgers said it best. That play didn't lose the game, but it definitely took away our chance to win it, because you want to put the ball in Aaron Rodgers' hand at the end, give that Packer team a chance to win it. CeCe, what was your reaction to the Packers' loss to this Rams team?
Well, first, as far as Ty Montgomery, I don't feel for him, because he's got a job to do. And you have to play the game out in real time. If you're following this game, you know that Green Bay has outplayed the Rams. Now, he's no great kickoff returner. And you have to know the kicker. Zuerlein is a kicker. He kicks the ball high. He's got a powerful leg. Like, this ball's not coming out. They got an undersized special teams. They covered the ball. They got three guys inside the 20. Forget about the fumble. So just knowing time, possession, knowing what the game is, knowing who you're going against. He's no great returner trying to say that, he wanted to make a play. This is not the time for him to make that play.
To your point, C, this is a very bad play if he doesn't fumble. Because it takes away the two-minute warning from you. You are praying the other team kicks it into the end zone. The Rams there want to kick it short to force you to do this.
They should sky kick it to take one play away from you. And, in this situation right here, you have to know, if it's in the end zone, I'm going to stay in there. So he makes a bad decision. And it's just hard to overcome in team sports in the last 2 or 3 minutes. When you make one decision, that's the decision that, did he win or lose the game? No, but it was one of the most monumental decisions, and you have to be able to support Aaron Rodgers. You have to know what was going on in the game. Everyone knew the Packers were going to come back. I don't know what forced him to think that he had to get involved in the storyline.
I feel like the Packers, once Greg Zuerlein makes that field goal, I feel like the Packers are favorites, even though they're down two. Like, if you tell me they're getting the ball, 2:05 left in a timeout,
yes,
down two, I pick a side. Who do you think is going to win? Aaron, he doesn't even need a touchdown. He doesn't need, and so they were the favorites in that spot.
And now, knowing your kicker.
Right, knowing your kicker, Mason Crosby, aside from that one meltdown game a few weeks ago, has been excellent throughout his entire career. Now, Mike Silver wrote a really interesting article late last night that I actually was reading during the break here that has some insight into what maybe was going on with Ty Montgomery. Because Ty Montgomery had a terrible sequence of plays. The last time Aaron Rodgers touched the ball, when they still had a lead, he misses a chip block on Aaron Donald on a 3rd and 6 that leads to a sack that then allowed the Rams to go down and take the lead. Prior to that, he was taken out of the game. And according to Mike Silver's article, was throwing a bit of a tantrum on the sideline because he was upset he was taken out of the game. Mm-hmm. They put him back in on the 3rd and 6. He misses the block. And then he has this opportunity to just do the smart thing and take a knee and doesn't do it. But this is something, the Rams' two biggest plays yesterday, and this is what makes you a great team. Their offense was not outstanding yesterday. Mm-hmm. Their defense was good in moments, but not great. And you said last week, see, it's no longer offense, defense, special teams, a third, a third, a third. The game has changed too much.
Yes.
I would argue it's almost like 55% offense, 35% defense, and 10% special teams these days. And that is up to 100, okay. I promise. The biggest play on special teams, the biggest play in the game prior to this one, was also a special teams play. when the Packers had dominated the first half. They had forced a punt from the Rams, up 10-0, 3 minutes left. Sam Shields, who, by the way, was he got a concussion with the Packers in 2016, missed the rest of that season, missed 2017 season, now with the Rams, downs it at the inch line. That leads to a safety, which then leads to the Rams getting the ball back. Instead of being 13-0 at the half, maybe 17-0 at the half, at least 10-0 at the half, it's 10-8 at the half. So this punt, the perfect punt, the great punt coverage, changed the flow of the game entirely. And then at the end of the second half, a special teams gaffe with just about 2 minutes left again changed the game irrevocably. Like two enormous special teams plays to keep the Rams undefeated. That's how you have a special season. When your offense isn't great, when your defense isn't great, and your special teams comes through for you.
Look, the Rams had their hands full on Sunday with the Packers. Did they prove anything to you with the fact that this wasn't an easy win, but they ended up winning?
Well, I thought the Packers looked very good. I thought there's a lot of positive things they can take from it. Time of possession, they got dominated on, but you can see if they could have gotten more rush attempts, you could see they were rushing the ball with Aaron Jones. They finally gave him. You could start to see kind of some of the promise that they need to be able to give them some balance. So I would say moving forward, there are some things that the Packers can take of. There are moral victories, and I like the way they played. If the Rams are the best team that we have in the NFL, the Packers have to like the way they fared against them. And because of the Rams, and they're in Los Angeles, there's a lot of stuff going on in Los Angeles this weekend. But the Packers basically had home field advantage in the L.A. Coliseum. Yes. Now, to me, that was very, very strange. So as you move forward, right now the Packers aren't in the playoffs, but if they were to go to your stadium, the Packers travel so well. Like, that's what I take from it. Like, if we go on the road, if they had to come back to L.A., I don't think the Rams would want to see the Packers again.
Listen, the Packers can beat anybody. It's why I thought it was so ridiculous they were 9.5-point underdogs. But this isn't LeBron missing those two free throws against the Spurs, and it's like, all right, we can take a lot of good things from it. You can overcome this loss. You only got 16 games. Next week, they're at New England. 2 weeks later, they're at Minnesota. The week after that, they're at Seattle. The Packers, they already had a tie early in the year against Minnesota that should have been a win. Like, there's only so many opportunities in a 16-game season.
Yeah, I do believe their ability to run the football and having a couple of young receivers emerge, those things will have tremendous carryover for the Packers. If they can duplicate that style, all right, they're going to be a playoff team right now outside the playoffs.
And, Jenna, to your point on the Rams, what the Rams yesterday, their quarterback was not one of their most important players. Like, Gurley was amazing. Aaron Donald had another two sacks. Their coach in this made adjustments in the second half. If you can have a quarterback playing at a fringe MVP level, and he doesn't have to be the star of the show for you every week.
He did make some big throws, though. He did make big throws when they had to move the ball. I think they were 18 of 18 on third down.
Eight of 18 on third down.
So for me, that right there, that was some of the best football he played on third down.
L.A. Rams remain undefeated at 8-0. Coming up, could the Saints be a sleeping giant in the NFC? That's next. First things first. This week on Thursday Night Football, Bay Area rivals square off as Derek Carr and the Raiders take on the 49ers. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox NFL Network and streaming on Prime Video.
Must be nice to be John Gruden, man. Like, typically a coach would, going into this game, we'd be saying, man, if Gruden don't win this game, he could be on the hot seat in year one. Not him.
He could be on the hot seat in 10 years. Back here on First Things First, we're going viral. The Red Sox clinched the World Series with a 5-1 Game 5 win last night. Baseball spilled onto the football field on Sunday. Take a look at this.
This is great.
Seahawks had a little bit of fun imitating a base brawl after a touchdown. There's Tyler Lockett hitting Doug Baldwin in the leg. And
oh,
chaos
angry Doug,
ensues.
Definitely.
Do we like this?
Oh, I love it. That's
it creative.
Great.
And Russell Wilson, he's a baseball player.
Exactly.
See Russell coming in there.
Boom.
I don't think he's thrown too many punches in his day.
I thought that was a very creative celebration.
That was. I like that. Baseball season, World Series game on. Absolutely.
Absolutely. You didn't like it, Jenna? What?
Too
much violence?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Oh, okay. All right, good.
I liked it. I'm comparing it with some of the greats, like the bowling ball stuff.
Oh, this is
sitting around and doing the duck, duck, goose. Those are
some of the great ones.
Some of the great ones.
Jenna's got a Mount Rushmore celebrations. Mount Rushmore season, everybody.
Stories to start your morning brought to you by Gillette Clear Gel. The Red Sox beat the Dodgers 5-1. won Game 5 to win the World Series, their fourth title since 2004. Team owner John Henry said, this is the greatest Red Sox team in history. Nick, what impressed you most about this Sox team?
Just their amazing consistency from day one of the season to about day 190 of the season, which was yesterday. Like, the All-Star break, they're in first place on pace for 114 wins. They finish with 108 wins. They make quick work of the Yankees, quick work of the Astros, and then quick work of the Dodgers. Like, at no point were they threatened this postseason, really, except for maybe the seventh inning of Game 4, briefly. Remarkable run.
And the whole way, Nick, the rookie skipper, manager, Alex Cora, he's able to get it done. I thought that was very, very important, not only with the talent, managing the pitching, and getting David Price to restore his confidence at the end was amazing. Congrats to the Red Sox.
All right, moving on to the Steelers now. They beat the Browns 33-18. Antonio Brown had a great afternoon, caught two touchdowns from Ben Roethlisberger. James Conner continues to shine in place of Lev Bell with 212 total yards and two touchdowns. Steelers improved to 4-2-1. CeCe, how impressed were you with Pittsburgh yesterday?
Very impressed. They were very focused. And given to the tragedy in Pittsburgh this weekend, knowing that as an athlete, you know that you have to provide a certain amount of entertainment so people can get away from it. So their escape for a few hours, James Conner continues to impress. But the physicality of that offensive line, this is the Pittsburgh Steelers, because they're not very physical on the defensive side. Good win from them, even though it was the Browns. Nick.
Listen, they were down 6-0 early. The Browns, because they're the Browns, couldn't. It should have been 14-0 early. Instead, it was 6-0. Then Pittsburgh dominated from there on out. But it should be noted, Mike Tomlin, who's always criticized, even though his coaching resume is almost impeccable, he lives in the community where that tragedy happened. He said at his post-game press conference, and we seem to be choked up, he's a member of the Squirrel Hill community. And his ability to do his job in the face of unspeakable tragedy, and as you said, listen, nothing solves what happened in Pittsburgh, but for people in Pittsburgh that maybe weren't directly affected by the tragedy but still had it weighing on them, it gave them a nice relief, or at least escape, I should say, for a few hours. Quality win, bigger than football this weekend for them.
All right, moving on. The Giants hosted Washington on Sunday. Very gracious hosts. They allowed Adrian Peterson to have his way all afternoon. Rushed for 149 yards, two touchdowns, and a win over New York. What up, CeCe? How impressed are you with AD?
I'm very impressed. Wait till you guys see the highlight come back around. You're going to see a coach on Washington's sideline. Now, he's not as fast as AD, but he's running after him down the sideline.
Right here, coming?
I'm so impressed. There he is right there. Yeah. Did you see him? Yeah. He's getting it. I'm impressed because this is not a guy that we thought had this left in him. We thought that he might have a couple good games, but his overall toughness has it's really changed this team. And I got a lot of respect, man. This guy is playing football for the minimum. And, man, he is playing like he's playing for $20 million. So a lot of respect to Adrian Peterson and what he's doing at this advanced age as a running back. Very, very rare you're going to see something like that.
5 of 7 games this year, he's had at least 96 yards rushing. If he continues this up in the second half of the season, this is one of those bullet points when he makes the Hall. Like the 2,000-yard season after the blown ACL.
Yes.
That having an all-pro, Pro Bowl caliber season. It wasn't just CNI that thought he was done after last year. The Saints thought he was done. The Cardinals thought he was done.
Yeah.
He's been great. That run right there, that is the longest run by someone his age since Jim Thorpe.
Wow.
Jim Thorpe, we had to pull out your record books. I don't know, but a long time ago, Jim Thorpe. Yeah, 60-yard run, 60-plus yard touchdown run.
Finally, Cam Newton looked great against the Ravens yesterday. Threw for two touchdowns, ran for one as the Panthers beat Baltimore 36-21. Carolina now 5-2. Nick, what do we learn about Cam Newton and the Panthers on Sunday?
Man, that they're a really legitimate contender, a really good football team, one of the best coach teams in the league. My nerdy football analytics side loves what Ron Rivera pulled off right before the half to basically steal 3 points. And Cam, he's not playing the level he played at in 2015, but I don't know that he'll play at that level again, but it's damn close. And the other thing is, man, it's funny how seasons can change. They're down 17-0, coming off a loss in the fourth quarter against the Eagles. And then from that fourth quarter to the end of the first half of this game against a very good opponent, the number one defense in football, they outscore
the Eagles and Ravens 41-7 in three quarters and turn their season around. So at 5-2, you have to consider them a contender. They haven't played the Saints yet. They won't until two of the last three games of the year. And Cam is the engine that's been pushing this offense from the word go.
Yeah, we're not going to see a lot of positive press coming out of Carolina because the Rams being undefeated, Drew Brees, what he's doing, breaking all these records, and them only having one win in the six-game.
One loss
in the six-game winning streak. But Carolina is playing good football. And their ability to be physical, like you talked about Ron Rivera, he didn't get enough credit. We call him Riverboat Ron, like he gambles. But he is a solid, rock solid coaching of football, offense and defense. 33 rush attempts by Carolina. When they have that, Cam rushing the ball mixed in with that running attack, they are hard to beat. Go ahead, Jenna.
Well, I was going to say, last year we talked so much about the problems with this team was that the team would go as Cam goes. And he was so inconsistent that every week in and week out, it was a different Panthers team. Mm-hmm.
True.
How do you beat inconsistency? How do you outcoach that?
Well, listen, the Panthers had so much problems last year, they went 11-5. And we're in a shootout playoff game that they barely lost. Like, the Panthers last year were a good football team. Now, Cam was up and down all year. Mm-hmm. This year, he hasn't been up and down. This year, the worst game he'd played was that Eagles game until the fourth quarter, where he had a remarkable fourth quarter. But one of the ways I think you can overcome if you're worried about your quarterback being inconsistent is the running game. 33 for 154 against the number one rush defense in football. That's what I don't know if the Ravens are still the number one rush defense, but going into the game yesterday, they were. Like, that's one way to overcome it.
That is one way to overcome it. But what they did this offseason was they tried to address the inconsistency at quarterback from Cam Newton. That's why they hired Norv Turner. So what you're speaking about, Jenna, they were trying to smooth out the bumps in Cam's game. And it's not as if they want Cam to play like they did in the MVP season. It's those bad games. It's turning the football over and making bad decisions. And Cam has played good football, even though the numbers don't reflect as far as touchdown passes. In this new NFL 2018, where the numbers are so inflated, Cam has kind of gone under the radar, but he has been more consistent because he hadn't had those dips. Brilliant fourth quarter against Philadelphia. Followed that up with a very good win against the Ravens.
And the Ravens on the other side, by the way, their season, the exact opposite story of the Panthers. It all started with the fourth quarter last week. They're up 10 against the Saints. They blow that lead. They get dominated in the first half. A team that could have been 5-2. Is now sitting at 4-4. So the fourth quarters of last week's game for the Panthers and the Ravens might have been
absolutely
turning points of their season.
And while the Panthers now 5-2. All right, let's move on to Sunday night football. Drew Brees and Kirk Cousins facing off. We'll take this till a minute left in the half. Cousins finds Adam Thielen, who fumbles, recovered by Marshawn Lattimore. Thielen not happy about his state of affairs. That would set up an Alvin Kamara touchdown, his second of the day. Second half, Cousins throws the brutal interception here. P.J. Williams takes it back for the pick six. Saints go on to win 30-20. They're now 6-1. Here is Drew Brees on the win.
I think it says a lot about the team. Obviously, we come into every game with a ton of confidence. I think we feel really confident going on the road. We feel like we're battle-tested, feel like we've won in a lot of different ways, been in a lot of different types of games already in just the first part of this season. Obviously this one had a little extra special meaning, being able to come in and get a win here against a great opponent, in a very, very tough venue, and just knowing that these guys are I think they're always going to be in the hunt.
All right, CeCe, how well are the Saints playing right now, especially coming off that win?
I mean, they're playing great football. As far as Drew Brees managing the game, doing what they had to do, now you're starting to see Dennis Allen get this defense turned around. They're very, very aggressive. Before the trade deadline, which comes up later on, trading for Eli Apple to give them some help on the back end. Their secondary really supported them, forcing two turnovers, the interception there, and then also the fumble they caused with Thielen earlier in the game. So now you're starting to see, getting supported. They had a bad two three quarters against Tampa Bay. Fitzy Magic caught him. And then since then, you have seen Drew Brees and this team doing whatever they have to do. Run the football. Drew Brees did not have the type of stat line you're going to say, wow, oh, man, he blew him away, Drew Brees. No, the football team won this game. Drew Brees helped them win the other five, but this one right here, special teams and defense, gets it done last night for the Saints.
Drew Brees threw for 120 yards. We've seen him do that in a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the game, and they won comfortably. Remember last week when we talked about the Patriots-Bears game? And I said the Bears won basically every stat but lost because of special teams touchdowns allowed. In this game, the Vikings, they had more total yards. They were better on third down. They had fewer penalties. They had more time possession. They had more first downs. So why'd they lose? Man, those two turnovers were killer. One of them takes points off the board. The Thielen fumble, they are at least going to get three. Mm-hmm. They might get seven. And up to that Thielen fumble, they had been dominating the football game. And so it's not only a fumble that takes points off the board, but it is returned deep into Minnesota territory.
Yeah, and the wide receivers have played great for Minnesota, passing attack, but they were responsible. Right there, Stephon Diggs, a shallow cross and man-to-man. You cannot stop. The quarterback will not know you're stopping. So Cousin throws it where Diggs is supposed to be. Pick six going the other way. Adam Thielen, they throw him a smoke route. You know the cornerback's going to be outside. If you decide to go inside, you know the heat and the smoke and the thunder is coming after you. So when you go in there, you're taking the risk yourself. And Thielen took that chance. They caused a fumble. Critical turnover. If the Vikings get a touchdown there, they go up 20-10. They end up losing 30-20. So you're talking about huge turnaround, and it was created by the wide receivers of the Vikings. Poor decision-making by both of them.
All right, can you explain more on the Diggs play? Because Collinsworth mentioned on the broadcast, you've been harping the last few weeks that more than half of the interceptions in this league are not the quarterback's fault. They're the receiver's fault. I understand that Diggs can't stop. Why would he have stopped? What's going through
his... Freelancing. That's what you do. You start freelance and think you know what's best compared to running out the play. It's man-to-man. What you're typically going to do is look at the defensive back and stair-step him across the field and stick it and run away. The quarterback, because he knows it's man-to-man, there is nothing that has told him that the guy is going to stop. So the communication is bad. One guy freelancing, and you can see after the play, Diggs talking to Cousins on the sideline, and you could see he was apologizing because that is one of the cardinal sins. Man-to-man, you must continue to run. You can't stop and sit down there.
So where does this leave the Vikings now after this loss?
And it leaves the Vikings in the most muddled division in football. First place, Chicago Bears, 4-3. Last place, Detroit Lions, 3-4. Teams in the middle both have a tie. There is no division like this right now. We don't talk much about the Lions, and they got beat badly by the Seahawks this weekend, but they're a game out. Like, they're one game out. Their only other division that's even close to the NFC North is the AFC South, where two games separate first to last. Like, where it leaves the Vikings is, I think we all know they're a good team, but much like I said about the Packers, you only get 16 of these chances, and so someone's going to come out of that division. I was very confident that division was going to have two playoff teams. I think now it's still likely they have two playoff teams, but it's far from a guarantee, and so the Bears...
He didn't have the Bears as one of them.
No, I absolutely didn't have the Bears as one of them.
But there's nothing the Bears are doing with Trubisky to make anyone in the division afraid. The Vikings are half game behind the Bears. I know they're not intimidated by what they're doing. Last night was a critical win. When you start looking at divisional winners at the end, that's why the Drew Brees said in the press conference, it was a little extra special. Why? Because we probably won't have to come back here again. So Saints keep pace with what they want to do, trying to win that division with Carolina on the heels and NFC North. It's up for grabs.
And on the Saints side of things, six-game winning streak, everything's all good. The critical win for them, if they lose, you know who they have next week, right? They have the Rams. Like, if we talk about the Panthers being 5-2. If the Saints lose, they're 5-2 playing the Rams next week. So and when you're talking about getting a bye, winning your division, maybe being the number one overall seed, every single game is so wildly critical. Huge win for New Orleans.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, is Patrick Mahomes running away with the MVP next on First Things First? Welcome back to First Things First. We're joined by head coach Eric Mangini. You know, we've been doing the show for almost an hour and a half already. We haven't even acknowledged that it is Halloween. Our lovely staff did a great job here of decorating.
Olivia, how long and I think a couple other people. Show?
An hour and a half?
It's, I mean, I don't know when the show started for you. For me, it started about 50 minutes ago. But maybe for you, you were out here doing a show by yourself. Coach Mangini, good to see you.
Really shoddy math there. That was, anyway, Halloween.
Yeah.
So
this
that's
week.
Going
hour and a half into the show.
Yep.
All right, you worked out at 2 a.m. this week, okay?
Yeah, I did.
All right, I'll cut her some slack. My apologies.
Fading. 2 hours to go, right? 2 hours? Coach, let's talk about the Kansas City Chiefs.
Full day's work, Jenna.
They improved to 7-1, beating the Broncos 30-23. Denver hung around in this one, but Mahomes is just too good. Surprisingly better than Case Keenum. Mahomes threw for 303 yards, 4 touchdowns. He's got now 26 touchdowns in 8 games this year. He'll probably start again next week. Here he is after the game.
For me, it's all about just getting the ball out of my hand. I mean, that's the biggest thing for me is as long as I'm getting the ball out of my hand, there's a good chance that good things are happening. And so I just try to – the O-line's protecting really, really well. And so I'm just getting it out of my hands and getting it to the playmakers, and they're scoring touchdowns.
All right, Coach, great game. Great game from the whole team. What impressed you the most about this now 7-1 Chiefs team?
Mm-hmm. You must have been so excited.
No, I mean
– every time we come and talk about Kansas City, you're so excited. What I did like about this game is there's an element of adversity, and that's what I've been looking for, or that's what I always look for with these young quarterbacks is how are they going to deal with things when things don't go exactly according to plan? And they didn't do very well on third down. They mm-hmm. struggled there. It was a situation where Denver was in the mix much longer than I think even Kansas City expected, and he was able to be resilient throughout that. And that, to me, is as important or probably more important than his ability to shine and excel when everything is going right. Thought he made a great point about getting the ball out and getting into the hands of playmakers. A lot of that is what happens. He hits a 5-yard slant that ends up going, you know, 40, 50 yards. He's got
yes.
Travis Kelce. He's got a lot of things that other guys may not have. But my biggest takeaway that was in the face of adversity, he was able to continue to excel the way that he has been.
Yeah, it's great to see him spread the ball around. Like, you don't know who to take away. Tyreek Hill is emerging. Man, is one of the most lethal threats. And I like his intermediate game. That's where I see his game growing. As far as a receiver, a threat, getting it in short, getting the ball quick. And you know that he has amazing quickness. But as a route runner, I've seen him improve. And Patty Mahomes' ability to be on target, that's the way you see that improvement. Sammy Watkins, man, if he's going to have a 100-yard game, or if he's going to have a big game, man, how are you going to be able to stop them? So for me, seeing other players play a major role, I don't like the fact that they didn't have 20 rush attempts. Now, I do understand you're going to win some games, but if they're going to be consistent, they have to be able to rush the ball, but Sammy Watkins being able to emerge. So you can't take away Kelce, can't take away Hunt, can't take away Hill. Like, you can't take away all these guys. So seeing them win in different form and fashion, I think that helps me out, knowing that they have the ability to be able to do it.
Well, they can spread the ball around to anybody they want, right? Like, that is the benefit that Pat Mahomes has that I almost over any quarterback in the league as far as, okay, so they've had 7 games this year that they've won. There's been a game that Travis Kelce was their best offensive player, aside from the quarterback, a game where it's been Kareem Hunt, a couple games where it's been Tyreek Hill. Yesterday was Sammy Watkins. Like, when you are game planning for the Chiefs, there's not one guy that you say, if we take him away, it cripples what they are able to do. Sammy Watkins was the guy, their big free agent acquisition, who was yet to have one of those games where he was, mm-hmm. you know, he would have gotten the game ball from the coach, so to speak. And that was yesterday. They fell down 7-0 to Denver. And then over the next 30 minutes of football, they blitzed them 30-7. Like, and they won the game in those 30 minutes from midway through the first to midway through the third. Like, that's how they did it. And from there, they kind of let the foot off the gas a bit. Denver ended up covering first time all year. The Chiefs didn't cover the Vegas spread. Like, but that I don't know how you game plan for the Chiefs offense. I know how you game plan for the Chiefs defense. Run it right at them. They have a horrible rush defense, allowing 5.5 yards per attempt.
That's how you game plan for the offense.
Just keep them off the field.
Off the field. But when you look at this, if you're going to take away Kelce and you're going to take away Hill, which is the starting point, the quarterback, especially a young quarterback, needs to have the maturity to be able to go to a Sammy Watkins. And not every guy mm-hmm. can do that. When you've got stars right. on the team, there's a tendency to want to push the ball to the stars no matter what. And oftentimes those stars are chirping in the huddle if they haven't gotten whatever they feel they need to get each game. So I like that fact. He threw the pick, what was it, late in the third quarter, early in the fourth quarter, and we kill Kansas City's defense pretty consistently, but they did a good job, I thought. They turned the ball over then twice late in the game. This game was closer than I imagine Kansas City expected, and I thought that Mahomes, with very little running game, was struggling on third down, showed some character in the victory.
And I know you don't want to put Mahomes anywhere other than where he is right now, and I understand that philosophy. But right where he is right now through 8 weeks is the NFL MVP. Would you agree with that? Through 8 weeks?
I hate doing the through 8 weeks, through 3 weeks, through 4 weeks. Let's see where he is at the end of the season. Every single week we come in here and somebody's stock is up, somebody's stock is down. What was good about this past week is he fought through adversity, didn't have a very good running game. He made a mistake late in the game that they were able to recover from. You know, there's a lot of positives in that.
Yeah, there's a lot of positives, but at the midway point, someone's going to be playing well. We do it 2014, 15, 16, 17. So it's either going to be him, Patrick Mahomes, or you're looking at Todd Gurley. They're undefeated. He's the best player on that team. So him and Patty Mahomes have been the most impressive at the halfway point in the season. Patty Mahomes, man, what he's doing from a touchdown, interception, and being able to distribute the ball to what I think the most dangerous offensive weapons in the NFL, that's been, I would think, right now that would probably tip me over Gurley as the MVP.
During our first Super Bowl season in New England, we were 5-5, and Bill showed a horse race, and he stopped it midway through. And he said, who's ahead? And, you know, like six guys raise their hand, horse number, whatever. And he's like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. All that matters is where they are at the end. And it's the same thing with any, you know, any evaluation like that.
Of course, but unlike the NFL season, unlike a horse race, there's like home field to be gained. There's a bye to be gained. And being this far ahead at the midway point does help you achieve those ultimate goals at the end, even though the Chiefs have lost a ton of home playoff games with home field.
Yeah, and I could see why Coach would be saying that, especially in a race as far as the horses don't have names. But lo and behold, one of those horses might be Secretariat, and that might be Patty Mahomes. That's one thing the coach didn't say. So, yes, we're jockeying for a position, but potentially this kid right here could be a special. Like, we don't have names on him yet, but if there was a special horse running, like if Coach would have told him that, I think more guys would have picked him, just like Patty Mahomes been anointed by Nick Wright.
The team the Chiefs played yesterday, the Denver Broncos, Pat Mahomes now played three times in his career, because he played the one game he played last year was against the Broncos. In his third game against them, a team that had played well against him in Denver the first time, he had four touchdowns, one pick, a 125 rating. Through eight games of the season, he has 26 touchdowns. The only guys to ever do that or have more than that are Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. They both won MVP when they did that. That's what Pat Mahomes is on track to do this season.
Belichick's horse racing story? My concern was that only five guys raised their hand. It seems like it would be really obvious. Got to take a break. Coming up, the Packers recover from their crushing loss this Sunday. That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, we are going viral. Mitch Trubisky got the Bears their fourth win of the year, beating the now 3-5 Jets. But the big highlight came before the game when Trubisky showed up as Mike Ditka. Coach, did Favre ever show up in a Mangini costume?
Yeah. A lot of guys would mimic my style.
Mangini?
Well, I mean, I had such a fashion sense that a lot of guys wanted to take that away. And
such an iconic.
Well, I don't want to brag. It's not the time.
You got to get a cigar and it got to be lit, even inside or outside.
And how much? About how much money in his pocket? See,
about a 10 lot. Stacks.
You know,
with
this
a rubber
dude.
Band on it.
He always, yeah.
Coach. Trubisky. You got to have at least 10,000 if you're gonna be Coach Ditka. That's how much cash he has every day.
That was the best thing Mitch Trubisky did all day. So I applaud him.
Yeah, screen pass.
He's showing up to the game. Little screen pass to Tariq Cohen.
Yeah, Bears fan it. Wonders, is that a trick or a treat?
But they got to win without Khalil Mack. Khalil Mack missed the first game of his career yesterday. So good for the Bears. But that was a cool little costume.
All right, let's talk some Packers and Rams. The Rams were 9.5-point favorites over Green Bay. Jumping ahead to the fourth, Aaron Rodgers finds Marquez Valdes-Scantling for the touchdown. That puts Green Bay up one. Later in the fourth, Todd Gurley from 23 yards outstops at the 13-yard line to set up the Greg Zuerlein field goal. Rams up two. Little more than 2 minutes left for Aaron Rodgers to attempt the comeback. That is plenty of time, but Ty Montgomery fumbles the ensuing kickoff, and Aaron Rodgers would not get another chance. Very disappointed. Rams go on to win 29-27. They improve to 8-0. Here is Aaron Rodgers after the loss.
Yeah, very disappointing. That play didn't lose the game, but it definitely took away an opportunity for us to go down and win it.
Obviously, the plan there is to stay in the end zone. Two-minute, we actually talked about it as a team. It's clearly probably the best situation that both sides of the ball handle right now. That's what those games come up to. Their decisions, and then Ty's in that decision situation, and I'm sure Ty was trying to make a play. So, I don't know exactly how deep he was, if it was close, but I think we all realize that with the management of the clock and where we wanted to be there, we wanted to be north of 2 minutes with the one timeout. We want to put the ball in Aaron's hands, but you trust your players. Tough decisions, close decisions, and like I said, I think Ty was just trying to make a play.
Perhaps Ty Montgomery should not have been trying to make a play. What did you think of the what was your reaction to the Packers' loss yesterday?
Well, I didn't think going into this game that it was going to come down to special teams, and really it was. The Rams had the fake punt, which they executed really well, and then they pinned Green Bay down. They were able to get the safety after that and then score, and that really changed the game dramatically the first half, and then it comes down to the end, where if Aaron Rodgers has the ball with 2:05 left, you love his chances. I like the fact that Green Bay defensively was able to get pressure,
yes,
be disruptive, show some things that they really haven't shown on a consistent basis throughout this part of the season. And look, with Green Bay, they can play with anybody. And as long as Aaron Rodgers is healthy and he's getting healthier, they're going to be in the mix. This was disappointing. But it just shows that they're going to be in the mix throughout the course of the season.
To your point on Green Bay's defense, that rookie, Jaire Alexander, played a tremendous football game, the best football game of his young NFL career. And I think they would have won it. I mean, I can't prove it, but if you would have asked me in that moment, once Zuerlein kicks that field goal, I'm like, okay, so Rodgers doesn't even need a touchdown? He just needs a field goal in perfect conditions? 2:05 and the two-minute warning? Coach, that's him returning that kick. Even if he doesn't fumble, is a bad play because of the clock, right? You want to make sure you have the two-minute warning at your disposal. You're hoping the other team kicks it into the end zone so you have the opportunity to take the knee. That's something the special teams coach or the head coach has to be telling him, and almost assuredly did tell him before the kick.
The coach told him.
McCarthy said we talked about it as a team. I didn't know if he meant generically, situationally, or
We talked about as a special team. There's a timeout right there. Yep. Everyone gathers up, and we're all on the same page. The only way that he's going to bring that ball out is if Zuerlein hits it low. And he hits a line drive. That's the only time. Especially, you have the two-minute warning there. You want to be able to save that. It's like an extra timeout. So he did go over it. Ty Montgomery blew this. And it wasn't only that play. Typically, when you make a mistake, coaches say, don't have that mistake lead you to make other mistakes. But Ty Montgomery made a couple other mistakes that led up to him making that mistake. Blitz protection. He tried to chip a guy. Missed him, which led to a sack. And then, ultimately, you could see this in the end where he was trying to make a play trying too hard. There were, I think, six kickoff opportunities before this. There were three touchbacks. So it wasn't like he was like, oh, I don't know what he's going to do. Half the time, they were touchbacks. He should have stayed in the end zone on this one because you have to play the game in real time. You got to give your superstar that extra timeout and get the ball to the 25-yard line.
And one of the most disappointing things is if they did go through it and they talked about it on the sideline and they reinforced, look, if this is in the end zone, take a knee, we keep the stop at the two-minute warning, and then he decides to come out. Chris talks about this a lot. When guys are trying to make a play, typically they do, but it's not for you, it's for the other team.
Yes.
When you start operating outside of the framework of the game plan, and we saw it with Richard Sherman a couple weeks ago where, he decides, I'm going to go inside, I'm going to cover this guy, and he gets the defensive holding on third and,
third and
400 yards.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So that happens more often than not. If you stay within the framework of the plan, typically good things happen. You start jumping out of that. And usually it helps.
In that situation, the coach tells you put your heels on the goal line. And if the ball forces you to go backwards, it's an easy decision. If I go back any, I'm going to stay, unless it's a line drive. If it's in front of me, I'm catching everything in front of me and return it. So it's pretty simple. Put your heels on the goal line. If the ball forces you to go backwards, you know I'm going to stay in there.
I'm glad you brought up the punt. There was the fake punt, which was really well designed. But the biggest play of the first half was the punt by Hecker, downed by Shields at the inch line. If that goes into the end zone, the Packers have the ball, up 10-0, inside of 3 minutes in the first half. They are almost assuredly going into the half up at least 10, maybe 13, maybe 17. But this play by a former Packer, Sam Shields, who thought his career was ended due to concussion, leads to a sack or a safety, which then leads to a touchdown.
And that was a mistake by the returner. The returner should have been running the other way. He brought the defenders to the play. Like, he should have been at the 10-yard line. The ball goes over your head. You are a decoy. So you got to be going to your far left to take one of those gunners away. That ball goes into the end zone.
The gunner doesn't know where the ball's going. The gunner's watching the return.
They're watching you, and typically you tell the guy to make it very dramatic. So they're waving their hand like they're going to fair catch it, but they're trying to bring everybody away because you only need a beat or two for that ball to go into the end zone. You just got to draw them away enough. Or you go, if you're going to go over there, you go block the first guy. Right. You don't fair catch. You go up and you blow up the first guy down so the ball has a chance to go into the end zone.
For the Rams, this is how you have a special season. A game where you were outplayed offensively and defensively, your special team steals one from you, steals one for you. Like, this is how you, in difference between going maybe 12-4 and being the 2 seed and 14-2 and potentially being the 1 seed, can be games like this. This was an excellent win for the Los Angeles Rams, where I thought the Packers played better than them throughout.
Rams, 8-0 right now. At halfway point, are they the best team? I'm just kidding. We'll talk about that. Coach, we'll see you later in the show. Coming up, can Carson Wentz lead the Eagles back to the playoffs? That's next on First Things First. Hey, we'll get to Carson Wentz and the Eagles in a minute. But first, Vikings wide receiver Adam Thielen. Watch this. Using the defender's helmet for a 14-yard gain.
That was a beautiful catch, Jenna Wolf. Am I right?
Very much so. One of his lone highlights. He had a rough night.
P.J. Williams got a little revenge later on, taking one back for a pick six. Thielen, spectacular catch. Him and Kirk Cousins, the overall chemistry they have in 8 games is amazing.
Another 100-yard game for Thielen.
Odell Beckham Jr. reaches back. Watch this. The great, crazy one-handed catch.
This got C out of seat on Sunday. This was a hell of a play by Odell Beckham, man.
The reason why this was such a great catch was because you're in danger of getting hit. All right? These catches are so much harder in the middle of the field than they are on the sideline.
Safety coming.
Oh, absolutely. It takes some courage to do this one.
Odell had a big game. Once again, didn't score a touchdown, but he had a big game.
Oh,
right.
They stink.
Finally, Kareem Hunt breaking through the middle, hurdles the D, powers into the end zone. Such a strong. This is just such
a good
team.
Do not try this at home. This high hurdle landing on your back leg. A non-athlete, I feel like, would tear every ligament in their knee and break some bones.
A non-athlete? 90% of all the athletes. I'm going to tear something if I try to jump up like that. Homeboy jumped up, put the kickstand on him, said, I got to go.
It's awesome.
And the play design. This is on 4th-and-1. How about a little option, triple option pitch?
All right, to the overseas portion of our show now for Eagles-Jaguars highlights in London for this one. Is Philly looking to get back on track? And that they did. Carson Wentz throwing for 3 touchdowns, 1 pick. He's thrown for 12 touchdowns and just 1 interception in the last 5 games. Eagles improved to 4-4 with the win. Meanwhile, the Jacksonville Jaguars have now lost 4 in a row. Here's Eagles head coach Doug Peterson.
Things haven't really gone our way the first half of this season, but it was great to get this victory today and go into the break with positive thoughts, obviously, and get ready for the next one.
But, you know, it was a huge win. You know, everyone's obviously excited heading into the bye week, you know, to get a week off, get our minds and get our bodies right. That's huge. And, you know, we got a long flight ahead of us. We're in London. There's a lot of things going on. So I think everyone's pretty excited that we're going back with a win and not a loss.
Still wasn't the dominating win that we all thought last year this team was going to come out, especially against a Jaguars team not playing
that's
very
struggling.
Well. But how impressive was Carson Wentz in this win?
Listen, it looked like it was going the dominating win fashion. They're up 17-6, and then field goal, field goal, field goal. All of a sudden, it's a 17-15 game. But then how did the Eagles respond to that? touchdown drive. Like, how did the Eagles at the end when they were up only six? How did they respond? Jacksonville couldn't get them off the field. That vaunted Jaguars defense got gashed with runs up the middle when they were down six, trying to get the ball back in, I guess, Blake Bortles' hands. But Carson Wentz made a special play early in the game, third and long, getting hit. It was vintage Wentz from last year, getting hit on third down, found a way to convert it, and I thought he was quite good. Here's the play I'm talking about. I mean, this is what running under duress, finding a receiver at the second level of the defense. But the Eagles had to win this game. You got the half dozen Jacksonville Jaguars getting detained night before, the couple nights before the game. It was some incident in some London nightclub. Like, you can't lose to a Jacksonville Jaguars team that's ripping itself apart at the seams right after you blow a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter to Carolina. Wentz was really good. The Eagles found a way to win. I didn't think it was an overall great performance, but it was a very important win for them in London.
Carson was very impressive. What he did, the variety of throws, working the ball, Jordan Matthews having the best game since him coming back with the Eagle, getting the rookie tight end, North Dakota State to South Dakota State, that combination. Goddard, yeah. You're not going to see many times in NFL history that's going to happen.
That's a good one.
But at the midway point, man, the Eagles, the bye week, I mean, they gotta reevaluate themselves. Because I was watching the game, and I said, neither one of these teams can make a serious push. Now, I'm trying to make a case for the Jags. I'm trying to fudge it a little bit. And then I look at the Eagles. They've been so inconsistent. So Carson Wentz, yes, impressive. But I'm not impressed with the Eagles. They're going to have to get a lot better.
What aren't you impressed with?
Their inability to be consistent. They don't have the physicality that they had last year. They are not very good on the defensive end on the backside. And they just don't have as many guys making plays. Last year, they had a theme to what they were going to do. Now, they went through two parts of the season. That's the MVP season of Carson Wentz, and then trying to find Nick Foles, what he could do, and then the teams played spectacular in three football games. That meant the divisional round, the championship game, and in the Super Bowl. So they are not a 500 talent team when they started the season. We're at the midway point for them, and they're 4-4. They have much better talent than their record.
Right. They had to win this game because even with the win, you know where they are in the NFC? Ninth place.
Yes.
Packers, Vikings, Seahawks, Panthers, Bears, Washington, Saints, Rams, all ahead of them. So, like, and by the way, we've talked about the NFC East, how winnable it is. Okay, well, Washington's now 5-2 with, according to what teams' records are right now, the easiest schedule of any team in the NFL the rest of the way. Washington's going to find a way to get to 10 wins. Like, at 5-2 right now with the schedule they have, it would be shocking to me if they don't at least go 5-4 the rest of the way. So Philly's got its work cut out for it. Like, Philly's going to have to start accumulating wins. This was a good step in that direction. But to Chris's point, they've had one dominant performance all year against the Giants. And the Giants have packed it in. Like, there hasn't been a vintage Eagles performance, even though I thought there were some really good plays from Carson Wentz on third down yesterday, which is how he made himself into the MVP candidate he was last year. Overall, they haven't been great. The Jags are not a good football team right now.
No.
I was just going to bounce off that. Well, what's going on with the Jacksonville Jaguars right now?
The Jags, there's certain teams, and Coach Mangini talks about this, how you're going to deal with adversity, how you're going to deal with success. The Jags, the success they had last year, led them to doing a lot of interviews this offseason, led to Jalen Ramsey making all these quotes and everything. They're not a good football
team. And it's not all Blake Bortles.
Oh, no, no. They got some problems on the defense. The Leonard Fournette's been injured. He's close to coming back, but their inability to have that dominant running game. This roster was not put together. Well, they didn't have enough playmakers when they started the season, and a couple injuries have decimated the wide receiving room, and also the running backs have been affected by it.
I just think the Jaguars bought into the hype that should have never existed. Here's who the Jags were last year. A very good defense on an above-average team that for some reason dominated one team, Pittsburgh. Like Jacksonville last year, 10-6. That's a good season. That ain't no great season. Their first playoff win against the Buffalo Bills, who were just thrilled to actually be in the postseason. Then they got Pittsburgh, a team they dominated early in the season. They put up 40-plus in the playoff game. They blow a halftime lead to the Pats in the AFC Championship game and act as if, okay, yeah, we'll obviously get back to that place. No, you won't. Like, you're not playing like it. Last year, you were an underdog to even get to the AFC Championship game. You can't be 10.
And they didn't start the season well. What Jalen Ramsey did as far as that interview and starting the season that well, I mean, starting the season that way, it was not a good start for the team. I told Nick, before this happened, old Spicy Mouth, it was going to come back to hurt him. Yep, that's his name. Hashtag Spicy Mouth old Jalen. Yes.
Meanwhile, that Jags team has lost four in a row.
Should be apprehended.
Listen,
they should be detained for faking to be a pro team.
They thought that their excuse about the thing that happened in London was, we thought the bottles of champagne were free, were just being sent to us. And what's the point you made, C?
When was the last time somebody sent you bottle service?
Right, the Jaguars.
Like, yeah, you're Friday night in Jacksonville. You're not going out getting VIP service. Like, let's just stop that. Like, let's just.
The internationally known Jacksonville Jaguars. Yeah. You got the random folks in London.
You know, you are Jacksonville. Listen, you're like Nick Wright trying to get in the club. Hey, man, Chris Carter's coming.
Hey,
how long is the wait?
How long is the wait?
Oh, man, it's a long wait. Well, where's Chris Carter, my partner, he's coming.
Once.
Okay.
One time, and you just put it on television.
They got detained once.
Okay, you know what?
Same thing. Time now for Put a Grid On. It's sponsored by CarMax. We're talking Packers. Aaron Rodgers had a decent showing, throw over 286 yards and a touchdown in the loss to the Rams. Nick, put a grade on Rodgers' performance yesterday.
B+, denied an opportunity to get an A+, because he couldn't complete the comeback, or didn't have a chance to even do the comeback. But he was solid throughout. I thought they left some points on the board early. He said as much in his postgame press conference. I give him a B+.
And dealing with that front that the Rams were presenting right there, I got to give him an A. Aaron Rodgers, you got to give him an A. He did everything he could do except stay in the end zone for Ty Montgomery there at the end to give him a chance to be able to win.
Rodgers would take a knee. They should have sent him back there. Just catch it, take a knee.
All right, got to take a break. Coming up, more chaos going on in Cleveland. That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, we're talking little Steelers. They beat the Cleveland Browns 33-18. Antonio Brown had a big game. He caught two touchdowns from Roethlisberger. James Conner also had a big game. Guys, what did the Pittsburgh Steelers prove in their win over Cleveland yesterday?
Well, I don't know if they proved anything, but they further confirmed what I think a lot of people thought after the first few weeks of the season could be the case, that this team started slow, that maybe the Le'Veon Bell drama and some of the locker room discord was actually affecting their level of focus. But this is one of the five most talented teams in football. And much like last year, they found their footing after a shaky start.
And much like last year, the same thing. In-house problems, in-house drama. And last year, the same thing as this year. They just worked itself out.
And as often the case in the NFL, talent's going to win out. It's going to take an enormous amount of discord or awful injury or really incompetent coaching, none of which the Steelers have had, to undermine a team that has Ben Roethlisberger, that has Antonio Brown, and has at least a handful of playmakers on defense that we've seen in the past, particularly on their front, play at a high level in this league. Like, the only thing that's been surprising to me about the Steelers, C, is James Conner doing this repeatedly.
Well, that's what Jenna was talking about. And she said, what did they prove? No, they didn't prove anything as a team, but they did prove something as far as James Conner, and he can replace L. Bell and the overall productivity. Not only rushing the football over 140 yards, but the pass receiving yards coming out of the backfield. So what did I get from this, Jenna? The Pittsburgh Steelers, they can get that same type of productivity from that offensive line that I believe is underrated. They can get it from Connor that they got from L. Bell, and they can do it for a lot less money. So I believe that the Pittsburgh Steelers continue to send a message out there that we can be productive. So they did prove to me. James Conner is a starting running back in this league. He's not a replacement. I told Nick, every game, he's making himself money. Because every game people are starting to see. Because, he's not the threat out of the backfield. Oh, he is a threat out of the backfield. We know he's a proven runner in this short period of time. His overall shiftiness, his vision. Like, I believe he can have an elite season if he's the featured running back in an offense.
Well, he's on pace now, halfway through the year, for more rushing yards than what would be Le'Veon Bell's career high. For only 100 yards shy of...
Okay, stay at home if you want to.
Right, yeah. Le'Veon Bell's career high in scrimmage yards. That incorporates the receiving as well. You're saying he's making himself money. Well, I'm curious about this. Do you think he's costing Le'Veon Bell money?
And by that, I mean the following. There was a time with the Denver Broncos, and I know this is a long time ago, but where it felt like, man, pick anybody. You got a former Marine. Put him in the backfield. He's going to rush for 1,000 yards. Orlandis Gary, Mike Anderson. You go down the list.
That's when they had the great offensive line coach, Alex Gibbs, and they also had that running, run blocking, that cutoff
zone
style
blocking, yep,
that people weren't really accustomed to, and they did it better than anyone else.
And yes. So I know the Steelers aren't running that style, but the point that I'm making is, now that we've seen another running back for the first time in Le'Veon Bell's tenure get the workload that Le'Veon was getting and put up similar production, I wonder if teams across the league, like the Jets, like the Colts, that were probably planning on giving Le'Veon Bell a big contract this offseason, how much they wonder, wait, is this system? How much of it is Le'Veon Bell as a special player, which I still believe he is, and how much of it is the system that teams are scheming to stop Antonio Brown?
I think teams always thought it was the system because you have Ben Roethlisberger. That was one thing that Brian Billick used to always tell me when he'd go out and talk to teams and everything, and they want to watch our tape, and they wanted to know kind of what was our emphasis in certain pass plays. It all came down to, hey, man, you don't have Randall Cunningham. Oh, you don't have Dante Culpepper. You don't have Chris Carter. You don't have Randy Moss. You don't have Jake Reed. So I believe that people all along knew that what Pittsburgh had with the weapons they have on the outside is a special situation. James Conner definitely made himself a lot of money.
At this point, we have to assume Le'Veon Bell is not going to come back, and this is the team that the Steelers have moving forward. How far can this team go?
I don't think they're a Super Bowl caliber team because I still think that their defense is still going to have problems. Their offense, when they function at a high level, they're going to be one of the best in the league. But I believe ultimately their lack of pass coverage ability on the back end will keep them from being. Now, the AFC, it's not stacked. You don't have to be a great team to be able to try to advance. But I don't believe they're good enough to be able to beat a team like New England.
Well, and you say we're going to assume Le'Veon Bell's not coming back. I can't quite assume that yet. It's on the board that he doesn't come back, and that wasn't on the board a month ago. But we'll know for sure in the next 2 weeks. If he doesn't show up by that drop-dead date.
I'm going to stop guessing, okay, though, Geno, like you. I'm just going to stop. I've never seen a guy treat it like this. I don't think it's worked in his best interest. And he's already forfeited over $8 million. I don't know how he's going to get that $8 million back.
All right, if he does come back, what does this team look like?
Well, so that to me is interesting. At this point, I didn't think it was possible, but at this point, James Conner's done enough to prove Big Ben right, even if Big Ben shouldn't have said it publicly, that James Conner should continue to get a heavy workload, particularly if Le'Veon Bell last year is the...
But you can't give him a heavy workload. How are you going to continue to give him a heavy workload?
James Conner?
Yes.
Why can't you just keep him as your feature back? Even if Le'Veon comes back.
Oh, you're going to keep him on the bench?
What? Yes.
You don't lose your starting spot from an injury. You don't lose your starting spot from holding out. So, no, I don't see Pittsburgh benching him when he comes back. And because he's an elite running back when you move him outside the numbers. That's not something James Conner can do. So, I would be shocked if they benched him. I don't believe that is on the board.
All right, let's talk on the other side with the Cleveland Browns. They themselves, I mean, it was the Steelers who were having all this in-house drama. Now it looks like the Browns are having some coaching drama as well. There's some talk about coaches may go if they continue losing, play calling duties swirling about. Mm-hmm. What do you think about what you saw from the Browns yesterday? Baker also did not have his best.
I think 1 week from today, they're going to fire Hugh Jackson. That's what I think. I think that you can't justify the record. You can't justify the lack of attention to detail in close games. And why do I say a week from today? So they play the Chiefs in a week. I imagine the Chiefs will pace them. And this report this weekend was that they might move on from Todd Haley. That there's a power struggle between Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley.
Move on from both?
No. That Todd Haley might lose that power struggle. Hugh Jackson can't win another power struggle here. Like, at some point when you have won 4 football games in 2.5 seasons as a head coach, and when we look at this team every week and we're like, man, they got some talent. They have Myles Garrett. They have Denzel Ward.
They're right there.
They need a better offensive line. The Joe Thomas retirement has really hurt them. Their new left tackle had a holding in the end zone, and he's been giving up sacks all year. But I think that they need some shock to the system because a team that was in every game the first 5 weeks of the year has been now blown out 2 of the last 3
weeks. I totally disagree with you. They've improved fundamentally. A team like this with so many good young players, they have to learn how to win games. There's no team we thought more improved than the Cleveland Browns. Nick, you thought they might win 9 games.
Yep.
So you don't lose that in 2 weeks. We knew ultimately there would be a power struggle between Todd Haley and Hugh because Hugh called plays before. Todd was going to call plays, but where their biggest problem has been in the wide receiver room. When they started to lose players, they lost Corey Coleman earlier, former number one draft pick. They brought Dez Bryant in. They didn't sign anyone. Josh Gordon, they had to be able to let him go. They do not have strong enough playmakers to be able to support their young quarterback, and I believe that teams have caught up to their offense, traded away Carlos Hyde last week. They don't have enough offensive weapons to be trading away people. So for me, if they had another wide receiver like the way their wide receiving room was 2 months ago, 3 months ago, then I believe it would support the quarterback. They need to stay exactly where they are, at least until the end of the season. You accomplish nothing by firing the coach this early in the season when you've seen so much improvement in so many of the young players.
Can you guys explain play calling to me? Who should be calling plays? Is it whoever the quarterback feels most comfortable with? Is it who has the most offensive history?
Listen, they brought it. If you're not going to let Todd Haley call plays, then why'd you bring him in 6 months ago? John Dorsey brought in Todd Haley to call plays, and I think he brought him in case they do fire Hugh Jackson, that they have an interim coach who's been a head coach before. They had Greg Williams there already, but given Greg Williams' history with the NFL, I don't think they can make him even interim head coach. But I'm not acting like Todd Haley hasn't had some curious decisions. Before they traded away Carlos Hyde, seemed to not want to give the ball to Nick Chubb. There are things that are you can criticize, but he was hired to do a job, the job he's done best in his NFL career. I would be surprised if they didn't let him do that job.
All right, let's talk a little Chiefs now. They improved to 7-1, beating the Broncos 30-23. Pat Mahomes, another great afternoon, threw 303 yards, 4 touchdowns. Pat Mahomes now has 26 touchdowns in 8 games this year. He's just having an just don't ask Mangini, but he's having an unbelievable year. What did you take away from the Chiefs' win yesterday?
This is the third time, they've played the Broncos since Pat Mahomes took over starter. They played them in Week 17 last year, and people say, oh, Broncos rested their starters. No, they didn't. Von Miller was out there. Their starting defense was out there. He played well in that game. And then the Broncos with a little film on him. The worst game of his career until the comeback was against the Broncos. For him to 4 touchdowns, 1 bad pick, and that was it. In a game, the Chiefs fell down 7-0 early in and then ripped off a 30-7 run in the next 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. I thought it was impressive. But the story to me of the game was not Pat Mahomes as much as it was, his embarrassment of riches around him. Sammy Watkins had a big day yesterday. He's now the 4th different skill position guy to be their leading scorer, leading yardage guy on the season already.
If you look at Kareem Hunt, not very, very productive. A couple explosive plays. If you look at Tyreek Hill, only targeted 4 times, 1 explosive play, but the fear he puts into the defense. So when Patty Mahomes is able to, we know what they're going to do. They're going to double team Kelce week in and week out. And you start seeing him find other players, and that being Sammy Watkins finally having that big breakout game with over 100 yards. I liked his ability to be able to run with the ball after the catch because you don't have to drop back and throw the ball 40 yards down the field. So I thought that was very, very impressive. And the ability to, knowing you're explosive, to be patient and realize, man, every game is totally different than the other game. I'm not going to try to force the football. Did have a little adversity as far as the interception, him coming back. So I like the consistency. You know, so he's just not, you know, every week trying to come out and win the game in the first quarter.
Right.
You can see the maturity that he's got. Patience, let the game come to him, read the defenses, try to get the ball out of his hand as quick as possible to all the weapons that he has.
How about their defense? Do you trust this defense
no.
a little bit? Okay.
No.
D
Ford played well. D Ford had 3 sacks. D Ford in a contract year is finally, for the first time in his Chiefs career, living up to that first-round draft pick they spent on him 5 years ago. But this rush defense, like, they're going to play the Rams in what will be one of the most marquee matchups of the season. It's Monday Night Football in Mexico City against 2 teams that at that point might be a combined something like 19-1. But Todd Gurley could have 270 yards in that game. Like, they're the worst rush defense in football. They're allowing 5.5 yards per carry, and you saw it yesterday. Like, the only thing, the reason that Phillip Lindsay didn't have more than 95 yards is because the Broncos were down big. They thought they had to pass. I don't know the solution to the rush defense for the Chiefs.
Yeah, I don't think the rush defense is going to get that much better, but where they are and where they can be able to negate that is red zone defense and third down defense. Mm-hmm. In those areas, all they got to do is be average. All they got to do is be in the middle of the pack in the NFL. That'd be good enough for this team. most critical down in third in football is third down. The Chiefs have been decent in that. As long as they do that, they'll keep getting great results.
Kansas City Chiefs, 7-1. Not bad. Got to take a very much needed break. Could the Saints be a sleeping giant in the NFC next on First Things First? Back here with Coach Mangini, Saints Vikings last night. A minute left in the half. Kirk Cousins to Adam Thielen. Thielen fumbles. Marshawn Lattimore recovers. Thielen not thrilled about his state of football affairs. And that would set up an Alvin Kamara touchdown, his second of the day. Second half now, Cousins throwing a brutal interception. P.J. Williams takes it back for a pick six. The New Orleans Saints go on to win this 30-20. They are now 6-1 on the season. Here is Drew Brees on that win.
I think it says a lot about the team. Obviously, we come into every game with a ton of confidence. I think we feel really confident going on the road. We feel like we're battle-tested. Feel like we've won in a lot of different ways, been in a lot of different types of games already in just the first part of this season. Obviously, this one had a little extra special meaning. Being able to come in and get a win here against a great opponent, in a very, very tough venue. And just knowing that these guys are, I think they're always going to be in the hunt.
So are the Saints. What did we learn about this New Orleans team yesterday?
Watching this game, here's another game that swung dramatically at the end of the half and the start of the second half. You get the fumble, turns into a touchdown, then they go for it on fourth down to start the second half because the Vikings wanted to be aggressive, and that converts into another field goal. But in watching New Orleans, what I like about this is they always go into the game with a significant plan. They've got a ton of stuff that they're going to do. But then there's a willingness by Drew Brees to just do what works. It's not about having the flash plays. They don't have to do that. So Kamara gets the ball 20 times. He had 7 catches, 13 touches. Mm-hmm. Ingram, he touches the ball 16 times. The willingness to go to the backs, the willingness to do things that I think historically they maybe didn't have the patience to do, to me, is really encouraging. And then defensively, when you look at Minnesota's last drive, it must have drove you crazy, Chris, how long it took for them to get down the field to score those final points. That's a really good indication of the development of New Orleans defense. They don't give up a quick score there, so it takes so much time off the clock. That's a huge plus, too. So there's a lot of things to like about New Orleans, but the biggest thing for me is their willingness to do whatever it takes and not have to win with the flashy plays.
That's a huge credit to Drew Brees, taking what the defense is going to give him, letting the game play out. But Dennis Allen, that defense, since the first game, since the first pass against Ryan Fitzpatrick in Tampa Bay, they give up a long touchdown to start the season to Deshaun Jackson. And then since then, they have steadily just improved their defense. The 2 turnovers that they created, their secondary, they got 14 points off those turnovers. So not only are we starting to learn about this defense, what they can't do, what they can't, you can see the overall growth of the secondary. From a wide receiver standpoint, they had a negative impact on this game. Stephon Diggs, the shallow cross, it's man-to-man. He stops running, forces Kirk Cousins, throws it in front of him. P.J. Williams goes the other way. That's 7 points right there. Adam Thielen, we throw him a bubble screen. We are up 13-10 in the red zone. He decides to cut inside and go inside the numbers, which you can't go inside on a bubble screen. He does not change the football. The football gets contacted. They go the other way. They get another touchdown. That's 14 points. In a game like this, you are not going to recover. The third thing from the Saints that I'm learning is in the 3 wins on the road, look at the places they won. In Atlanta, in Baltimore, in Minnesota, all very, very tough places. It lets you know not only they not a just a mentally physical football, mentally and a physically a very a team that will respond to those tough circumstances. So you got to be pleased with what we've seen, and I'll stop rambling.
On the Thielen play, I forget which coach it was that would say to you, where do you think they went? Right? Like when you guys, wide receivers doing the jitterbug stuff around. Mm-hmm. On this play, actually, break this one down since we're running the video of it. Why is this Diggs' fault?
Well, for one, they're in man-to-man across the board. The quarterback thinks if they're in man-to-man, you're going to continue to run. Diggs did not give him any indicator that he was going to stop. That's why I tell fans all the time, 60% of the interceptions are the wide receiver's fault. So he should have kept going. The worst it would have been is an incomplete. But he gave false information to the quarterback, forced a turnover. Diggs catches the bubble. He's got blockers outside. He decides to go inside. That smoke and that heat is inside. Those defenders are going to be coming, swarming to the football. So both the wide receivers making negative plays and had an impact on the game.
Well, that is it's one of the reasons I like watching football with you on Sundays is, and one day Coach Mangini will join us, and Jenna, your invitation always
Everybody,
extended.
You in the back, holding that piece of paper.
Watching with UC, it is a reminder of how much of this game is avoiding the violence of it. Like, watching wide receivers who know how to get down, when to get down, what to do, is an enormous part of at least how you consume football. And so when Adam Thielen makes the decision to go inside instead of outside, like, he can do that, but he's got to know the violence is coming. And he's got to know I have to be particularly safe with the football in this spot. And he wasn't. And Thielen's been unbelievable this year. He's on a record-setting pace, by the way, yesterday, targeted 7 times, 7 catches, 100 yards again, and a touchdown. But this was a play that
the guy's help is coming inside. You cannot go inside. And if you do go inside, you got to put 2 hands on the football. You just don't expect the Vikings receivers, who have been phenomenal, to have a negative impact on the game. And both of them, Diggs with the shallow cross, Thielen catching the bubble screen, deciding one-on-one on the defensive back, I'm going to go inside. That fumble there turned into 7 points for the Saints the other way.
And it's a lot like the stretch running game where you cut the backside guy free and you tell the running back, if you decide to cut back, it's buyer beware. You need to know what you're getting into. The frustrating thing on the shallow cross is it was obviously man-to-man defense. You talk to the wide receivers about green grass grow.
Yes.
So if you don't see another defender, a zone defender there, you're going to continue on. And then after the ball's intercepted, he stops running. Look, chase it. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if he's going to get pulled up. Typically, the most dangerous player after a pick is the intended receiver.
Yes.
Because nobody knows where he is. But in this play, he just stops running. I'm not saying it would have made a difference, but we'll never know if it'll make a difference because he stops.
This is such a key game for the Saints. To win this game on the road when Drew Brees throws for 120, and I know you're complimenting Drew Brees for taking the game as it came.
Yes.
But if you told me going into it, Drew Brees is going to throw for 120 yards, I just said, well, the Saints are about to have their second loss of the year. The Vikings are going to have one of their best wins of the year. And when they've got – the Saints have the Rams coming up next week. Now, all of a sudden, if they win that game, they're, at that moment, the best record in the NFC with that dead tiebreaker against the Rams. Like, for them to find a way to win this game, and your point about their defense, weeks 1 through 3, this defense has given up 34.5 points a game, over 400 yards per game. Weeks 4 through 8 now, the last 5 weeks, 20 points per game. They have 6 takeaways. They gave up 10 pass touchdowns first 3 games of the year. They've given up 5 since then. Much like the Chiefs, they don't have to have a top 5 defense. But if they have an average defense with Drew Brees playing at this level, Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram doing what they can do, this is a team that can make the Super Bowl. Like, if the defense is just almost as good as it was last year, the offense can power them.
We talked so much about how the Rams are so good because they're such a complete team on both sides of the ball, but there are a few other teams who are like that as well. The Saints are slowly turning into that team. We talked about this in week 2. I said, what's the only thing that's going to hold the Saints back? And we said, well, obviously their defense. It doesn't look like that's the case now.
The one thing I worry about is Michael Thomas being the predominant pass catcher. Now, I understand Kamara coming out of the backfield tonight, but there are other wide receivers. Because if I clamp down on Kamara, say I double him and double Michael Thomas, who's going to make that next play? Is the rookie out of UCF, the wide receiver they spent the first round pick, is he going to be that guy? Another receiver has to emerge. Teddy Ginn out for the season on injured reserve. They got to have another guy emerge as a pass catcher.
And defensively, it was encouraging, especially that last drive for them to make Minnesota take as much time off the clock as they did. And with a lot of these teams that have high-powered offenses, if you can at least make the other team go the long, hard way, then you're gonna be in a good situation in most games. Now, the fact that they had to trade for a cornerback tells you that there's real concerns in the secondary, and at some point that's going to continue to get exploited. So it's how quickly they can coordinate the pressure packages, how sound they can be across the board, and if they just make people earn each one of the touchdowns as opposed to big plays?
Yeah, the Saints have done a good job as far as getting information on Eli Apple when they traded for him. He's got three other guys on from the Ohio State team that he was on. He's got Michael Thomas on the offensive side. He's got the safety Coleman, who was there before him, and he's also got Lattimore and Von Bell. All of those guys played on that national championship team for Ohio State, so hoping that some of that being familiar with guys on the team helps emerge Eli Apple to be that first-round talent that the Giants thought he was.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.